Steve, when you paused there, like you said, summer-like, and highs in the 80s, and then there was a pause, was that just to let it sink in?
I just wanted everyone to realize just exactly what's in store for
it
us.
It worked for me. Wendy, did it work for you?
Yeah, it did. That was good usage.
I like that.
Good
that
usage was... of not talking?
Yeah, pregnant pause.
Because I was just saying yesterday to Sharon, it's we kind of didn't have a late summer.
Right.
We kind of went right to the coolness.
Right. So let's have it now.
Here it comes.
Why don't we we'll have it now.
I don't need it to come back to you. Aren't you kind of ready for fall?
No. I would like it to stay warm as long as possible.
How about like 70 degrees? Isn't that perfect?
That's fine.
It's going to get up into the 80s and such.
That's fine. On Friday's show, Wendy, you revealed something.
it was a reveal party.
It was a reveal party. None of us played but you because we couldn't top what you revealed.
I've asked everyone over the course of the weekend, and no one has experienced, no one that I know has experienced what I experienced.
You were attacked by a tick.
It's the weirdest
Wendy,
thing, you guys. What?
I went hiking in Wisconsin over the weekend.
Yeah.
I, honest to God.
You mean tick land?
A tick land? Yeah. I almost got a sympathy tick for you.
What happened?
I really thought I had one in my head. It just was a little teeny tiny twig end.
Oh.
But I'm like, if I get ticked after making fun of Wendy.
Ticked.
Steve has been ticked
you
by you before, Wendy.
Day, yeah.
It's not the first time.
Tend to dune.
I was I was not that worried about it. It was really tiny. The more I investigated, if it's a nymph deer tick, which is a little one, those are the ones that carry Lyme disease.
And for some reason, you believe that that was the type. I don't remember what your criteria was for deciding that, but you figured out that that was it. It was a nymph tick.
Well, because it was tiny.
Yeah.
It was like a cross between a poppy seed and a sesame seed.
Yeah.
Bigger than a poppy seed, smaller than a sesame seed.
Because a regular tick could give you a concussion when it falls on your head. They're so big.
No, but honestly, when a tick gets big, my mom was bitten once, but she's not here to tell me about it now.
Oh.
And when it's on you, it gets bulbous and ugly because it sucks your blood.
Yeah.
This was flat, and I thought it was a freckle.
Maybe you caught it extremely early on.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, but I still have a mark where it was.
Do you really?
Connected to me. Again, tinier than a sesame seed, bigger than a poppy seed.
Put that on our Facebook page
no.
so we can experience which Facebook post has the least amount of hits. Like a month from today, we're going, wow, still no hits on that tick picture. That's weird.
I can still see a little indentation where it was. There's no red rash around it. People have worried me on the text line. Look for a bullseye rash or if it gets infected.
Now, for the post, make it a little collage. Put a poppy seed.
Yep.
And
then
a
sesame seed. And glue them to your side then next to the
comparison
the
photos.
Tick bite.
All right, well, you saw the text. It was starting
a lot of
to freak me out.
People were afraid for, I mean, seriously, very afraid for you, and many of them suggested that you see a doctor immediately.
Well, it's funny, because I called my doctor, and I love
my
doctor.
Immediately.
I did call during the show, just, you know, to explain, here's what happened.
Yep.
I have no reaction at this point.
I think it was a nymph tick. Did you say that?
No, I didn't. I probably should have, because they called me back. I talked to the office manager, and they said, yes, we'll have the doctor call you back after we run this past him.
Yes.
And then she called back and said, where were you bitten?
Where on your body or where on the globe?
Yes, where on my body. Well, both.
Oh.
Below the globe. And like to the right, like in between my belly.
She just revealed more.
In between my belly button and hip. So kind of, you know, like where your appendix would be, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm having an appendix attack.
Maybe. Yeah.
Because you know I'm a hypochondriac.
So depending on where on your body the tick would have burrowed, that would have decided how quickly they could see you?
I don't know what the question was for. I guess maybe because I was able to see it. Like if you had a tick in your head, on your head or behind your ear where my mom had it, you wouldn't be able to look and see if there's a reaction. I think they just wanted to know where on my body.
Oh, that makes sense.
So they called back very late in the afternoon at 4:28 and said the doctor has...
How very dragnet of you, by the way.
Well, there's a reason for my...
I thought that's a time.
There's a reason for this.
4:28 p.m.
Yeah.
At 4:28, they called and said, the office manager, whomever I spoke to, called and said, your doctor has called your pharmacy. There are two pills of doxycycline. He wants you to take them both together right away.
Uh-huh. What does that drug do?
It's an antibiotic for a bacterial infection.
All right. Did you know that already, or did you just learn
that? I looked that up.
Oh, you did? All right.
And I know that, you know, we're all becoming kind of immune to antibiotics because they're prescribed so much. But the fact that he called this in made me a little worried.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, we have an order for you to go get a blood test. We want you to get a Lyme disease test.
Oh.
And I said, okay.
Without even seeing it. That's just from what you told them.
Yes.
Wow.
And then the doctor wants to see me today. So now I'm freaking out. So here's why I say it was 428, because the office manager said, where do I send the order?
Here at 428. Did they word it that way?
No.
But it's 428.
I said,
where do I send the order?
My email address. She said, oh, no, we can't email it. I said, okay, it's 428 on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be able to get out there and pick it up. What do you recommend? And they said, well, we could send it to the hospital. And I said, well, what hospital? And I need to check my insurance plan and see where I'm going to go get this blood test.
Right.
I said, how long are you there? And she said, we'll be here for 30 more minutes.
Oh, the
and
race
I said,
is on.
I said, okay. So I'm Googling. I'm trying to find the closest laboratory near me or laboratory, as you call it.
Yeah.
So now, every place I call, they closed at 4:30. So I couldn't get a fax number or anything. So I went online. I found a fax number. I found a place in my plan. And I called the doctor back at about 4:40. And it went to the voicemail and said, you know, we are now closed for the day. I'm like, are you kidding me? So I leave this long, involved message, and here's where I'd like the report or the order sent.
Yeah.
Here's the fax number. Please let me know that you received this so I know if I'm good to go tomorrow morning.
Yes.
Didn't hear from anybody. Call the laboratory, and they said, you know, leave a message. We'll get back to you when we're not busy. You can call this number for an appointment or any questions at a toll-free number, different location. Called that number. They're like, I'm sorry. Our hours are Monday through Friday. I know. So my son, Michael McInerney, had a gig at Blue Village Vinyl. He was going to play guitar, and then Bobby Scafish was there signing his book. And so that's happening at 1 o'clock. I'm like, you know, I'm just going to drive out to this place. So I drive out to this lab. I waited 45 minutes. They didn't have my order.
Oh, no.
What happens then? Frustrated. So then on my way in today, the doctor's office called and said, yes, we faxed your order to the lab. And I said, oh, great.
But is this one of those situations where every minute counts?
Because
there's some medical things where people go, oh, she'd still be with us if only she had had that test done on Friday.
Well, God, I hope not.
I hope not.
Right. Say it more convincingly.
I mean it. I mean it.
But I don't think, I think, you know.
I was one of the people who said you should see a doctor.
I know, because the texts were scaring me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so I'm going to go get the Lyme disease test. And I'm not joking about it. We had a guest, a young girl up who got Lyme disease. And she could barely walk. And it takes a toll on your muscles.
Yeah.
Your neurological, it's not fun. It's not good. And I'm not making light of it. There's nothing I can do right now. And I know in her case, there were a lot of false negative tests. Like she'd get her blood test for Lyme disease, and it's like it's fine.
Right.
So I don't know that this is. Let's jump on it. But I'm going to go get my blood drawn today.
You'll do that after the show, Steve.
I don't know if you covered this, but was there any discussion of waiting for signs of disease? I mean,
well, if you get a reaction, obviously the problem here with a tick is they have bacteria, which since they're sucking your blood, it can get into your bloodstream, and it's a bacterial infection that can be treated if caught early.
Right.
So I think I looked online, and you're supposed to check for a bullseye rash, but sometimes people don't get that.
Yeah.
And any weirdness in where I was bitten, like if it swelled up or looked like it was infected, it's still tiny.
Yeah.
So my point is, and I know Lyme disease is very serious, and I don't mean to discount it at all.
No, I understand.
But we spend way too much money on healthcare in this country, and our insurance rates go up because we do so many things that we don't necessarily need to have done. And I just wondered if for every tick bite in the country,
that's my question,
we're spending
too.
$500 in treatment before we know whether there's something that needs to be treated.
Well, and that was a question, too, that, you know, I just called expecting my doctor to go, oh, just keep an eye on it, and
right.
we'll see what happens.
Right.
But then the more I talk to people, no one I know, is except my mom, had gotten bitten by a tick. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if every doctor says, here, jump on this doxycycline.
Right, sure.
Yeah, because
right.
in Canada, they would just say, they would laugh.
Oh, I mean, it's another day.
They would never, ever.
They would put maple syrup on it.
Right.
That's the first thing
yeah.
they do.
Remember the country music song, I Want to Check You for Ticks?
Yes.
No.
Beautiful song.
It was a fun song.
Great
beautiful
song.
Yep. I'll have to listen to it on the way home today. All right, well, that's my update.
I hope everything's okay.
I'm sure it is, but
I'm
doing this as a public service announcement, because if you find a tick on your person,
yep.
and that person's you,
yes.
call your doctor.
Yep.
That's all I'm
saying.
Solid
advice. Very solid advice. All right, more show ahead. If you think of... You pronounce it differently than other people do. Wendy, while you were battling ticks this weekend, our friend Steve Bertrand was visiting one of the most premier supper clubs all the land.
Ishnala.
Yeah.
He's not here to tell us about
He went back. He got a deal where he gets to go back for seconds.
It's just open seasonally, correct?
Yeah, it's open through the end of October.
You're going?
Yeah, I'm either going this upcoming weekend or the weekend after. I don't know which, but I'm definitely going.
Do they give you a little relish tray?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
What's in it? Do you know? Usually it's tri bean salad, maybe some pate.
You're talking about an old fashioned?
No. About the relish tray. I just said, Steve, that you were there at Ishnala. Here's the funny thing. I love that they bring the relish tray, but there's nothing on the relish tray that I eat.
I know.
I'm just happy that it's there.
I have to take a little something.
It's crazy.
Something.
Steve, they do that, right? That was part of the
I didn't see the relish tray last Saturday, but you know what else, though, were the little bread sticks, the plastic wrapped bread sticks that I haven't had
so good.
Forever. And you dip them in, they have a homemade cheese spread.
Yeah. Isn't that delicious?
Did you get prime rib?
My buddy got prime rib. I got shrimp Dijon because I figured that was very supper clubbish.
Yes.
And it was great.
I can't wait to go back.
Had a grasshopper for dessert.
What is that?
It's a drink, like a milkshake
cream
with cream de mint, cocoa.
So tasty.
You didn't have an old fashioned? Or?
I did. I had lots of stuff.
And a Manhattan. I like those as well.
I had the, Bob Prosser suggested the old fashioned sour.
Oh, yeah.
Made with bourbon instead of the others of us had sweet and I had sour.
Do you remember the old days at the family weddings where family members would get a whiskey stone sour?
Yes. Yes.
Or my
Slow
sister's drink
fizz.
Was a Tom Collins.
Yes.
I don't even know if people
Sometimes
order those
a
anymore.
Harvey Wallbanger would be enjoyed.
Yes.
Remember the Slow Gin Fizz?
Yes,
gin
I do.
I was just going to say the Slow Gin Fizz. My college drink.
May I also recommend the Lime Ricky?
I don't know what that
you
is.
You don't remember that? That was popular for a while. But there was a year where Harvey Wallbanger was all the rage. That's
right.
All people were drinking.
What's even in that?
I don't know. Because I think now if you went into a bar and asked for one, you would just get stared at, wouldn't you?
Not if you were at Ishnala.
They'd have them ready.
A modern classic that combines a screwdriver with the Italian liqueur Galliano.
Oh,
that's not
that's
good.
I think I know why it went out of favor.
Oh, man.
People drank them for a year, and then they just went, what are we doing?
Long Island iced tea.
Those were great. God, I used to go to ladies' night at Oliver's all the time in Lombard.
Remember, every time someone would have one, they would always say the same thing. Boy, they sneak up on you. You don't think that they've got anything, and then all of a sudden you have no idea who you are, where you are, how you got there.
You know that it's all the clear liquors.
Yeah, that's what it is.
All rolled up, and it doesn't taste anything like iced tea.
No, or Long Island.
No.
Nothing. All right, we must take a break. News is coming, and then there's a full show ahead. Stay here. Wendy, did you have any money?
Why did Terry not give you your
$20
allowance today?
No, I have my $20. I've got my
$20.
Just deciding how best to spend it. I don't want to waste it on the first thing I see.
I would like to know someday if we could go through what you spend your $20 on for 1 week.
Well, most of it is either gasoline or lunch or both. And then by the time I have bought gasoline to get here to work and lunch, I usually have $3 or $4 left over, sometimes a little less, sometimes a little more.
Do you roll it over to the next day?
I have in the past, yeah.
Do you set it aside for the orphans?
Yeah, I give some to the orphans.
Do you ever save up for something like, oh, I'm not going to eat lunch and I'm just going to get 4 gallons of gas because I'm looking for a new Slinky?
Yeah, that's happened a few times, yes.
Interesting.
Yep. How about this couple in Pennsylvania who accidentally had $120,000 deposited into their bank account by their bank? They did. I think it's an interesting move. I don't know if it was the best move, but they quickly spent it.
I could see where they'd want to.
But how do you not figure out? All right, so let's say that happens to you. All of a sudden, you're doing I don't know if you do this. A lot of families do this. Like on a monthly basis, you go through your expenses and your bank statements, and you make sure everything checks and balances out. And you see that the bank has accidentally awarded you $120,000. So then do you sit down with your husband or wife and say, well, this is found money. Baby Jesus sent us $120,000. Let us go out and spend it.
Yeah, that's probably a stupid idea. The first question I would ask Jim is, have you been stripping again? We've got an extra $120,000.
If that's true, he's doing something right.
He should go back to it.
That's very good money. A Pennsylvania couple is accused of theft after going on a shopping spree with $120,000 that was mistakenly deposited into their bank account, according to a report. Robert Williams and his wife, Tiffany Williams, appeared in court on Tuesday after they spent 2.5 weeks blowing through most of the accidental windfall on expenses such as cars, bills, and a camper. Robert, age 36, and his 35-year-old wife were arraigned on charges for theft and receiving stolen property. State police say that the BB&T Bank deposited the dough into the couple's account on May the 31st in a clerical error by a bank teller. Oops. But by June the 19th, the pair had spent six figures on purchases that included the SUV, two four-wheelers, and a car trailer. They also allegedly used the money for bills, for car repairs, for cash purchases, as well as giving $15,000 to friends.
Well, A, they paid off their bills, so they decreased their debt.
Smart move.
Two, they shared.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Wouldn't you wait a few
years?
Yeah. Like, let's see what happens to this.
Well, you have to know, in a world where everything is not just recorded, but double recorded and triple recorded, that at some point somebody at the bank is going to get wise to this.
This happened to me on a much smaller level.
How much in your case?
It was an additional $1,800. There were two deposits, an $1,800 one, and then I think like $150.
Wow.
And so I was looking through, I do everything electronically, and you can click on, it was a check.
Yeah.
So I clicked on it because I'm like, where did I get a check for $1,800?
Yeah.
And it was not addressed to me. It had some other guy's name on it, and it was a payroll check.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, oh, well, this $150, I better check this deposit as well. And I looked at it, and the checks were made out to the same last name, a different first name, and in the memo it said congratulations. So I'm like, somebody either graduated from high school or got confirmed.
Yeah.
These are somebody's checks. So I thought about it for just a second, and I'm like, I got to go to the bank and bring this up.
Sure, of course.
So I went to the bank and brought it up, and I said, I don't know how this happened, but I have to be honest with you, I didn't do anything about it for the last 30 days because I just kind of assumed I...
It would fix itself.
No,
right? Well,
yes, but I also didn't click on the check, so I just assumed, something was deposited. Maybe I transferred money from another account and forgot about it.
Yeah.
I just didn't think about it, and it wasn't $120,000 either.
But even $1,800...
But I thought maybe I transferred from one account to another to, you know...
Yeah, you didn't know it wasn't your money for 30 days.
I swear to God, I didn't. Right. So the minute I found out it was, I went to the bank, I pulled up my app on my phone and showed them, look, this is not my name, and this is in my account. And she goes, oh, wow, that's interesting. And then she checked it and looked at it. And what happened was the teller that day where this gentleman deposited his checks wrote my account number by mistake.
Oh.
It was off by one
inverted
number.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I just wonder...
What sort of reward did they give you?
Well, I just wanted a nice thank you, and God, I'm so glad you're being honest.
Yeah.
It was none of that. It was like, I said, did this gentleman call the bank to find out what was going on? And she said, let me check. She goes, no, there are no reports that he called. And I'm like, well, wow, I'm, you know, this could be his mortgage, and this is obvious. And she's like, okay, well, you know, thanks for bringing it in.
Because that would be my first thought in a case like this, in your case, but especially in a case with $120,000 at stake, where I'd say, if I'm getting it accidentally, somebody's losing it accidentally, and that's a bunch of money to lose accidentally.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that could have been a guy's mortgage payment.
Easily.
But he didn't call, so then I'm...
Right. How did that happen for that much money?
Maybe he's like you and doesn't do it online.
Oh, maybe.
No, I'm not insulting
you. No, you can't. I'm right with that.
Because I would know all of a sudden that I deposited checks, and
sure.
I would look the next day and go, wait a minute, I'm not credited for this,
yes.
And I would have called within a day.
Yes. Yes.
Maureen said she had the same thing happen to her. Hey, Maureen.
Hi.
How much did you get?
Well, my story is that I got over $100,000 credited to my account, and it was at a bank where I worked. And... So I didn't know it was in my account, and one of my departments was the help desk. So every day, they would use my account to make sure the systems were up and running. So they come back and say, yeah, it's up and running. Everything looks good. And I said, well, what's the balance in my account? And the girl said to me, $103,000-something. And I said, what are you talking about? I don't have $100,000 in my checking account. She said, yes, you do. So I said to her, it's not my money. You have to check and see where it came from. So she checks, and she finds out that it was an accounts payable check that was actually an ACH transaction that was deposited to my account.
You're lucky they didn't accuse you of stealing
it. Yeah.
And not only that, I thought maybe it was a test. I thought maybe audit was testing me.
Oh.
Because I'm an officer. I was an officer at the bank. So I called accounts payable and left a message for, I knew the girl who ran that department, and I left a message for her saying, you know, hey Peggy, this money's in my account, it's not mine. So I never heard back. Or weeks go by, 6 weeks later, I still have this money in my account.
Wow.
So now for sure I think I'm being tested. So I reported to the president of the retail bank, so I let him know what was going on, and I sent another email to Peggy and said, listen, you've got a week. You don't take the money out in a week. I'm claiming it as mine. I've tried everything I know to tell you guys this isn't my money.
Right.
So another week goes by, and I called her one more time, and then she finally took the money out. And so I said to her, so would you have found this, Peg? And she said, no. And I said, really? She said, no. She said, what we did was we were paying bills, obviously. She's payable. And we picked up your account for when, you know, when I would do my expense report, they would credit my account.
Yeah.
And they picked up my account for some guy who had a bill that was due that he was looking for $100,000. And they put it into my account. She said, no. And when he contacted us, we just issued another credit.
Oh,
they
my God.
I never even looked for it.
Didn't that make you mad?
When I talked to my boss, I said to him, you know, I really thought somebody was testing me. And he said, you should have kept the damn money.
Oh, yep. God.
Yep. Maureen, thank you.
Thank you for sharing.
Okay.
Yeah. They never would have found it.
They never would have found it. And that's when Maureen became a bank robber that day. All right, more discussion on this and other topics. Want to jump in? 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Money.
We were talking about this couple in Pennsylvania that somehow got $120,000 accidentally put into their bank account. So what did they do? They spent it.
Yeah, I would have waited.
Waited a little while.
What did they wait, a month?
About a month, yeah, right?
That's not long. I'd wait at least
a little year. Just a little bit more, but it took them about a month, a little less than a month, to blow through almost all the money, $120,000.
I could have done that way quicker.
Easily, yeah.
Frank has called us. Hey, Frank, what's going on?
Hey, Wendy, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
I'm on my way to work over at your favorite Taco Bell.
Oh, I love Taco Bell. Get a beef chalupa. Oh, yay. I'll see you later there, Frank.
I'll be there till 5.
All right. All right.
Live Moss, Wendy. Live Moss.
I do.
All right.
So the same
actually,
thing
happened. I had a relative in the same situation.
Explain.
They dropped $68,000 into their account. My relative has, you know, multiple children, and it's expensive to raise kids, and they did exactly what that couple did. Say, hey, it's a lottery. They spent it. My sister-in-law ended up in prison for a year and a half.
Oh, no.
What?
Yes. My brother would have went, too, if it wasn't for the fact that they have as many children as they do.
Wow.
He got a year, 2 years house arrest. She got a year and a half in prison.
I know it's stealing, guys. I'm sorry, but I never would have expected a over year prison sentence.
So how did they word it when it came down to the sentencing? What exactly was the crime that they called it?
Bank fraud.
It was bank fraud. Good. Even though they didn't initiate it.
It wasn't theirs. They never bothered to report it.
Yeah.
You know, if they take money out of your account, they ain't coming to tell you.
Right.
But if you spend money that ain't yours, they're going to be on you. So whatever's going to happen to this couple, it's not going to be pretty.
Is she out now, or is she still in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This was a few years ago, but it was just like he described as soon as I turned the radio on. They thought about it, sat around. Hey, you know what? It's found money. No, it ain't found money. It's misplaced.
They made
money.
No effort at all to report it to the bank or to anybody? They didn't try to?
No.
All
right, let me ask both you something, Frank and Bill.
Yeah.
Say you find an envelope with $50,000 on the street.
Right.
What are you going to do?
If there's no way for it to be traced, guess what? I hit the lottery.
I kind of might. But, I don't know.
But I'm the guy who also, if I find your cell phone on the floor, I'll call the first number. Hey, you know what? I got this cell phone. Come pick it up.
Yeah.
If I find a credit card, I'll snap it in half. You know what I mean? Toss it away.
Yeah.
Yeah, karma. Karma's karma.
Yeah.
I know, but
I want it done to me.
Something put in your account through a bank, you got to think at some point, as Bill mentioned, they're going to figure this out.
It's
so,
computers. It's not going to go away.
Oh, Frank.
Oh, that's horrible.
It's a record.
Thanks for calling. Get my chalupa box ready.
All right, I'll have it ready for you at 5.
Deposit it into Wendy's account. We won't say anything. Just put it in her account.
Thank you, Frank.
Well, Wendy, you guys have a great day.
Thank you, too.
That's my Taco Bell. Oh. I'm embarrassed to know that someone listens that goes there, because what I order for all of us is like sometimes $50.
Wow.
There's four of us.
Wow.
Debbie's on the line. She has called us, too. Hey, Debbie.
Hi. My stories aren't as grand as the last two. Those are really something.
What happened?
Mine is not as grand as the last
That's
two.
That's all right.
But when we were young in the 60s, my sister and I went with my mother to open our first savings account, and when probably 10 bucks back then. So we were walking out, and the teller panically started calling us back. And in my sister, she wanted my sister's passport thing back. Remember how we used to have little books?
Yeah.
And she had put all the money that the whole bank had for that day into my sister's account.
Oh, wow.
Score!
She got lucky, because back then there wasn't all the computers and the paper trails and stuff. That, you know, I mean, I know we would have went back, you know, eventually if we saw it. But, we were like, wow. I kept on telling my sister, you were like a millionaire for a second.
Some banks had 4,000,000% interest back then. I remember that was a thing.
And remember, they'd have to put the passbook in a typewriter and line it up properly to type by hand the amount of the deposit.
Yes.
Do you remember how much it was?
I think it was probably just maybe a little over $1,000,000. I can't remember. I was pretty young. But, that was something. I was like, thinking back now, I'm like, what if we just kept on walking out, you know? And
some banks
would have bought a lot of Barbies.
Yes.
Some banks would give you a toaster or deposit $1,000,000 in your account. Everybody wanted your business back then. I miss those days.
You used to get gifts back then.
Wow, Debbie. That's crazy. Thanks.
I want to tell you, both of you, thank you for making me laugh all the time.
Thank you for listening. We appreciate it.
Thanks,
Deb.
That's
so nice of you. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
How about, though, that you have to, once you realize that there's been a mistake and you're the recipient of that kind of money, you probably get with your husband and wife and try to figure out What are the odds of them figuring this out? Do we gamble with this? Do we just spend it on stuff and hope that nothing happens?
You tell the bank.
Most of us would do that. So what was different with this couple, this Pennsylvania couple, where they figured, we can get away with this. Nobody's going to catch us.
Are they millennials? Everybody else blames millennials.
I'm not blaming anything on them.
But, I mean, when this happened to me, I didn't even talk to Jim about it. I just went back to the bank.
And tried to fix it. This is crazy.
Because they're going to find out. Although it's weird, we had Frank from Taco Bell who said his sister-in-law went to prison for this.
Yes.
And the other caller said that they never would have figured it out.
Right.
But I bet they would have.
But even, like you use the example, what if you found an envelope with money? Don't you assume now with cameras everywhere, it's not going to go unnoticed? If somebody dropped that kind of money, they would go back to try to trace their steps, and there'd be a security camera somewhere.
But I mean, all right, if you lost an envelope of $50,000 near the subway that Jussie Smollett goes to,
you'd
go back and check, and you'd go into Subway and say, hey, did anybody turn in any money? But other than that, what are you going to do? You're not going to demand video records.
If life imitates movies and television, and it does sometimes, that's some mafia money, right?
You don't know. Some people might
be. There's been so many movies where that's the plot point where.
The mafia's not hip anymore.
No?
Remember we talked about movie wise? It's like The Godfather and Goodfellas and Casino. Now they're not really making mob movies anymore.
All right.
Some people don't use banks. Some people just have a big wad of cash. Maybe they were going to, you know, buy a townhouse or something or put a deposit down.
Yeah. Could be.
What would you do?
I would try my best to figure out who it was.
How would you do that?
There's always the fear that if you go to somebody who seems like they're in charge and say, I just found an envelope with a crazy amount of money in it, that they would say,
we'll take care of it,
and then you never hear from them again. Yeah.
Something to ponder today. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand. He's in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, and I'm going to come clean. During my life, I have smoked, I have quit.
Yep.
I have tried vaping to quit smoking.
Oh, no.
Vaping
all this in one day? All this today? Dr. Kim, I'm sorry you have to hear this.
No.
Wendy used to smoke Camels, and I don't mean the cigarettes. She would smoke actual Camels.
Oh, my God.
That's
Can
crazy.
We get serious for a minute?
Yes.
Dr. Samuel Kim is in the studio with us, thoracic surgeon at Northwestern Medicine. And first of all, thank you for coming up, and I apologize for Bill. Let's just get that out of the way.
Thank you very much for having me here.
You're welcome.
All right, so vaping is in the news lately. I am astounded by hearing some of the reports that teenagers are vaping, like the percentage is unreal. Why are they doing it?
Well, you know, it kind of shocked me too. You know, as of 2014, my understanding was that maybe 10% of the teenagers in high school were vaping.
Mm-hmm.
In last three years, that number has doubled to about 20%. One in five kids in high school are now vaping.
Yep.
Has to be, you know, peer pressure. They want, you know, and there's this notion that somehow vaping is cool or hip in the culture, and I don't know why that is. But it's
the same argument that a generation or so ago could have been said about cigarettes, right?
That is completely correct.
It's the same story.
But these kids don't, they think cigarettes are stupid and they hate cigarettes, but they're vaping. Isn't that crazy?
And that once you start vaping, and there's substance like a nicotine and cannabis,
mm-hmm.
they're very addictive drugs. I mean, and maybe the kids
cannabis is addicting? I know nicotine is.
Well,
trust me.
You know, I don't know. I have not smoked cannabis, but it must be addictive because, you know, and now once the kids are hooked onto cigarette, cannabis, and so forth, it's very hard for them to get out of it.
Yeah, right. Right.
And then the other thing about vaping is that they flavor these products with
bubble gums
and so
forth. Pina colada.
And it's very easy for the kids to, you know, get hooked onto it. Cigarette, I mean, a lot of people don't like the smell of it, taste of it. But when you wrap it with, you know, candy flavor or bubble gum, it's very easy for the teenagers and younger generation people to get hooked on.
So if you're a kid and you're just starting out on it, you're saying to yourself, it's not cigarettes. Cigarettes are bad.
Right.
We know that. It's a healthy alternative to cigarettes. Is it, though?
I don't think so. A lot of products that are actually in cigarette, I mean, there's an e-cigarette or cannabis-related vaping products.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of toxin in it that were already known to be carcinogens, such as formaldehyde or heavy metals.
Yeah, right.
So, unlike a cigarette where you smoke and there's a lot of tars and heavier amount of chemical that cause cancer, a lot of these products that once you get into the lung will cause inflammation, and those inflammation will eventually lead to chronic lung damage or possibly lung cancer. A lot of those products are actually still in these products that they think that is safe. So my recommendation is that, it's not something that is safe at all.
Right.
We don't know the long-term or even short-term effect of what these products do to your body, because frankly, we have not done those studies yet. A fortunate thing is that, American Lung Association or even the National Cancer Institute of Health has recognized the epidemics of vaping. So they have spent a lot of money or grant to institutions like a Northwestern, where recently we were awarded with one of the largest grants in the nation to study the effect of vaping on the health, lung health of the millennials. One of the pulmonologists, Robbie Callahan, is leading that study.
Mm-hmm.
The unfortunate thing about this is that we will not know the true effect of vaping.
The long-term effect?
Long-term effect of vaping until maybe 15 or 30 years from now.
And then it's going to be too late. Now, I know in the news now, the CDC has issued a warning, don't use any vape products. I know what I've been reading was there was a vitamin E oil that, from my understanding, when you vape it, it's in vaporized form, but then you breathe it into your lungs, and then it reaches your body temperature and kind of coats your lungs with this oil or acetate. Vitamin E is good for you, but not in this way.
Right.
Is this why these people have been dying?
So we still don't know. So the vitamin E acetate are contained in your dietary supplement products or skin, care products. So it's something that is ubiquitous in what we use.
Yeah.
But in the forms of, vaporized vitamin acetate, we really don't know what it does to your lung. So, about 80% of people who currently have vaping-related lung injury, they think that, it's associated with the THC or the cannabis-related vaping product.
So not the nicotine things, more the
About 80% of those patients who right now we suspect.
Yeah.
Seems to use THC-related product, and a lot of those products contain the vitamin E acetate.
Mm-hmm.
So theory is that maybe vitamin E acetate has somehow caused this. But the unusual thing about this is that not everybody who has a THC-related vaping-related injury had a vitamin E acetate on those products either.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So the majority of people had THC related product, and some of those products had a vitamin E acetate,
mm-hmm.
but not all of them. And then additional 20% of people who had a nicotine related product vaping, those patients also developed a vaping related lung injury.
Mm-hmm.
So my theory is that it's not just one product, but maybe it's a combination of product, and then how it was delivered. And maybe it's not on every single people, but those people are more have a more predisposition
right.
to getting a lung related injuries. So when you take a look at the CT scan of those patients who develop vaping related lung injury,
mm-hmm.
it looks like as though there's a multiple mechanism of injury all combined together. So I don't suspect that it's just one single product, or mm-hmm. maybe it's a combination of a product that did it, but maybe it's a multiple product or multiple components that are in these individual products, and maybe not affecting all the people, but some of the people who are more susceptible to getting a lung injury.
Is this a fad that'll go away in a year or so?
I hope so.
I don't know. It seems to be getting bigger.
It seems to be getting more popular as time goes on.
Right, and I about 10 days ago,
yeah,
I heard that there's a first patient who died in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
In less than 2 weeks, now that number has gone to 5.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the number of people we suspect has a vaping-related lung injuries has gone up from 200 to 400. I think we're just scratching the surface of this problem right now. And down the road, we're going to see more and more of these patients who are going to be detected and then going to be treating with a vaping-related injury.
But is that enough of a deterrent? Because you could have said, again, I know we're comparing this to cigarettes, but people were kind of aware that they were causing cancer and it wasn't stopping anybody.
Well, so in 1950s and 60s, I mean, there's a lot of similarity what's happening with the e-cigarette or vaping to what happened with the cigarette industry back in 50s and 60s. I'm a surgeon, and I do surgery on people who have lung cancer or emphysema or COPD and requiring a lung transplant. Mm-hmm. All these patients developed their habit or got hooked into cigarette back in 50s and 60s when they didn't have a lot of public awareness of the dangers of cigarette. And then once they got hooked onto nicotine, it's very hard for some people to quit that habit. And they're now seeing the consequences of what happened, those use of cigarette 15, 30 years from what they did. Same thing with the e-cigarette. I mean, it really got popularized in the past 5 years. And a lot of information, we didn't have this kind of information, and we still don't know a lot of information.
For the long term.
For both short and the long term. Because there's really no standard in the industry what goes into these kind of products and what kind of a delivery mechanism they have. And then long-term study has not been done to see what are the ramifications of a long-term use on this product yet. So because of that, there's such a lack of information and this sort of culture of sort of, coolness,
sure,
I would say, behind the vaping.
Yeah.
A lot of, people who are very susceptible, such as millennials or people who are in teenagers and so forth, they're being exposed to these products without fully understanding what the dangers
are
their
health.
Are kids more at risk for this lung injury than an adult?
It's hard to say because, we don't have a lot of information, but we do know that more teenagers are using these products than, let's say, your elderly patient. I think more elderly patients tend to use cigarette, mm-hmm, to get their nicotine and so, mm-hmm, forth. But younger patients are using e-cigarette as their choice to consume the nicotine.
Do you have any questions or comments for Dr. Samuel Kim? You can get us at 312-981-7200. That's the call in and the text line.
And Dr. Samuel Kim is a thoracic surgeon at Northwestern Medicine. Remember, better knowledge means better health for you and your family. Turn to Northwestern Medicine at nm.org/healthbeatnews for health tips, research, and more. Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder. We're talking with thoracic surgeon at Northwestern Medicine, Dr. Samuel Kim, and we are talking about the dangers of vaping. Bill had mentioned, when people started smoking, they didn't know it was dangerous back then either. The weird thing is people started smoking cigarettes and they weren't dying right away. With this vaping, it's scary to me that with these lung injury, that people are dying. How do you die from a lung injury?
So, whatever the product or a combination product you have in this vaping is causing a acute injury. It's like inflammation. So, and there are different patterns of injury that we're seeing in this cluster of patients. Some of them are very different. But whatever the mechanism is, once these injuries are triggered, the body responds by with a massive inflammation and consolidation of the lung.
So you can't breathe.
Yeah, exactly. And people cannot really breathing. And on top of that, super infection of the lung could form in both bacterial and so forth. So basically, patients have an ultimate lung failure.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, make it short. We see these kind of patterns of injury from exposure to environment toxin agent a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some similarities in these sort of patterns of injury that we're seeing. But what is kind of fascinating is that it's not just one pattern, but it's multiple patterns of injury that we're seeing in these patients.
Vaping is governed by the FDA, correct?
It is.
All right. So does the FDA have the power to just out and out ban these products, or do they not?
I believe so.
Yeah.
But you know, there are proponents of vaping, or you know, who was argue that, you know, there's a lot of product that is contained in it already has been approved to mm-hmm. use in cigarette and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there really isn't one thing they will say that to point lead to the fact that it is caused by the vaping and so forth. We're suspecting. So there's going to be a lot of legal challenges when it comes down to this. And frankly, we don't know, you know, a lot of information still. What is behind? What
right.
are the mechanisms behind these sort of outbreak of a vaping-related
yeah.
lung injuries?
And definitely the lesser of two evils. If you smoke cigarettes, I do know people that have used e-cigarettes to reduce the nicotine and ultimately quit. Bottom line is you have to want to quit. The gum, the nicotine gum has worked for me. The patch has worked for people. But you got to keep trying, and you got to never have a cigarette again.
I completely agree with you on that one. I mean, you know, my recommendation, if you're trying to quit smoking or even e-cigarette, is cold turkey. There's really nothing out there that is, you know, you should put into your lung except air. Anything that you know, any small particle inhalation could cause inflammation of your lung, because these products get dislodged in the tiniest airway
right.
in your lung, and invariably will cause some sort of inflammation. These chronic inflammation and damage could lead to long-term lung failure and possibly lung cancer down the road.
I mean, that's why you cough.
Sure.
I do not want to admit this, but the first time I ever tried a cigarette, it's like, how do you inhale? And somebody said, act like you've seen a ghost and go, a ghost, and you breathe in, and the first thing you do is cough, because your body's trying to get that foreign object out of your lungs.
Exactly.
It's crazy how people then can continue to do it, me included. I've been there.
A lot of times, you know, all of us, we really don't know what we're inhaling when you're using these kind of products.
Of course.
Especially, you know, something like cigarette. For years, we really didn't know what
yeah.
was in it. Something that was even more scary about these sort of epidemic of a vaping related injury and the vaping product altogether is that there's really no industry standard, and there are a lot of unlicensed manufacturers
mm-hmm.
who could actually put their own spin to the product. So, you know, you say vaping or nicotine vaping and so forth, depends on the manufacturer. Anything could go into this product.
Yeah.
And so how do you really know what you're putting into your body?
How come they're not regulating this? How can that happen?
So, I mean,
is it too new? Is that what it is?
I think that that's a problem. No.
Thank you for shedding some light on this. Really, you know, talk to your kids. It's scary that kids are vaping, but I know that this news should be scary to them because they could die from it.
Yep.
And I'm hoping this is a sort of wake-up call for all of us. And to stop, you know, vaping altogether, and so that we don't get into the same thing that happened with the cigarette industry.
Right, so true. Dr. Samuel Kim, thoracic surgeon over at Northwestern Medicine, really appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Break some news. Eric Zorn, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. We sing the praises of Eric Zorn.
Oh, a little extra accompaniment today,
nice,
Eric.
Nice,
wasn't that pleasant?
I wish she'd done it in harmony, but...
I can't sing that high.
She was attacked by a tick, Eric. Come on. Hi, everybody. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. Eric, let's talk about driver's licenses, shall we?
It's a very interesting issue, I think. The Illinois Secretary of State's office is involved in a legal dispute with a Muslim woman from Rockford who wants to have her, she wanted to have her driver's license picture taken with her hijab, her, mm-hmm. her religious scarf. And that's okay, but you, to do that, you have to sign a document that basically says, you always wear this in public, and essentially, if we catch you not wearing it in public, your driver's license will be revoked.
But they do always wear it, don't they?
Well, you tell me.
Well, her one of her complaints is that there are times, and she says, like when I'm taking my kid to school and I'm running late, where I might get in the car and just drive my kid to school and not put on my hijab,
right?
Which, you know, I don't know exactly what the rules are and what the practices are, but that seems
from
like,
a religious standpoint.
From a religious standpoint, yeah, from a religious standpoint, absolutely. And it's up to her, right? It's between her and her faith tradition and her faith leaders whether that kind of thing is okay. It's not up to Jesse White whether she can take off her hijab to take her kid to school,
right?
And so she's filed suit in federal court here in Chicago to challenge this ruling and to say that this violates her freedom of religion to have to sign this document, that she wants the freedom to, like I say, like, and they're clearly, and you know, the law is pretty interesting because it goes into some detail, obviously in a medical emergency, right? They can take your hijab off. When you go to the hairdresser, you take it off. It's quasi-public in the hairdressing situation. But you know, there are a lot of Muslim women in the Muslim tradition who feel like they don't want to have their hair, they want their hair covered, especially in the presence of men who are not family members.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's their religious tradition. That's their religious practice. And it does seem to me that it's fine that we have this religious exemption for people. Then the question sort of becomes, well, there are a couple questions. One is, what qualifies as a religion? And I wrote a column a couple of years ago in 2016 about a young woman in college who wants to be wanted to wear a colander on her head.
I don't know what that is.
A colander.
I know what that is.
a strainer.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Like, then yeah. I do know what that is.
A spaghetti strainer, right. Yeah. Essentially. And it's because she's the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Well, she was mocking.
Have you heard? Well, that, yeah, that is. That, the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monsters is basically a bunch of skeptics who have created this sort of mythical, jocular dogma that makes fun of the dogma
of organized religion. Yeah.
And they call themselves Pastafarians, you know. And,
oh, I have heard that.
Lots of puns, you know, penny mm-hmm. for your thoughts.
Oh, okay. Very good.
So
you have an application form on you?
There's actually a photo that we got because she went into the driver's license facility and she got the photo taken.
Yeah.
And of course,
how did that happen? They allowed it?
Who knows, right? I mean, the person taking the photo said it's a religious thing, and the guy said, well, you know, what am I going to do, get into a big to-do about this?
Yeah.
And he just took the picture.
They made me get hair out of my eyes, and then I look at my picture and it's in my eyes.
Oh.
So I'm shocked that they let it go.
Is it like a Jessica Rabbit thing you're talking about?
No, it looks bad. But
so you can make the
argument that for religious reasons
you can. And there's a case in Maine where a guy was a member of some church, and I apologize to this faith tradition. I don't know what it is, but you wear horns on your head. The men wear like little horns, That person was allowed to wear his horns in his driver's license photo. The woman with the strainer on her head had to come back in and have the picture retaken because the Secretary of State revoked her license over that. Which my view of that was, hey, look, you know, I don't want Jesse White saying, well, your religious statement with your headgear is okay, but your religious statement with your headgear is not okay.
Yeah.
And that was the argument I made at the time.
So the key has to be defining what exactly a religion is, right?
Yeah, I mean, it gets to a pretty peculiar situation where you got to say, well, is this a legitimate religious belief? Is this a sincerely held religious belief? I believe that this young woman sincerely wanted to mock religion.
Yeah.
I don't know, is that a sincere religious belief? And we could debate it, but I'm not sure I want Jesse White to have the last word, the Secretary of State. There was a case then out in California. This is a good one where a retired Marine wanted to get his driver's license photo in Bakersfield, California, taken with USMC on his baseball cap. And he wanted that picture taken. And they said, well, you can't wear your baseball cap for a driver's license photo.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, but this is a religious statement. They said, how so? He said, well, because I swore an oath to defend America, and our official Pledge of Allegiance says America is one nation under God. Therefore, this hat is a statement of my religious belief.
Good argument.
Zing.
Yeah.
And they said,
solid.
And they kind of went, blah, 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 blah. Okay. So he got his picture taken with his baseball cap. And in reporting this column from last week, I thought of our friend Bill.
Oh.
And it is extremely rare to see Bill without a baseball cap.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
what's your license look like?
It happened.
No hat?
I don't have the hat on in there. I took it off.
Did they tell you to? Because you know that when they're putting out a... That's very strange. I mean, look at that.
Who is that unhatted man?
It's very strange.
Look, there's a bunch of space above your head where the hat should be.
I have a memory.
It says to be inserted later.
You should draw it in with a Sharpie. The president can do it. You should be able to do it. I mean, I remember... Am I right about this, Bill, that years ago, when you were working at another radio station, you went to like the Christmas party or something, some big station event.
Yes.
And there was a no hats rule.
It was at a bowling alley that did not allow baseball caps.
And you turned around and walked out. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, no.
You did that at a restaurant.
I was told, that happened at a restaurant once where I was told I was going to have to leave.
Now, I'm not sure that I've ever seen Bill without his baseball cap.
Because their thing was, it brings in gang activity, and I said to them, I'm not in a gang at the moment.
Yeah, right.
I'm trying my best to find a gang, but I was told...
The Funny Faces gang, maybe. Goofy Grape will be in later.
So, I mean, there's times where you conform to the rules. Like a driver's license, I get it. And when I go to the DMV and they go, you got to take your hat off, I take the hat off, I do the picture, and I move on.
Yeah, okay. My argument that I made last week was I don't want Jesse White or anyone going in and making decisions about what religious belief is okay and what they... And I can't understand why they don't let Bill wear his hat.
Yeah.
You can go in there and with a full beard and have your picture taken and then walk out of the driver's license facility and shave your beard.
Right.
Your license is still good. You can wear a wig.
Yeah.
Yes, you can wear your wig.
If I wear makeup all the time, but say I didn't wear makeup for my picture, it would look like James Spader.
Oh.
I look completely different without eye makeup on.
Okay.
So that's another thing.
But they certainly would allow you to wear eye makeup.
Exactly.
And the other thing is there's another issue with glasses. And the rules in Illinois say that glasses may be allowed. Now, I used to wear glasses, and I had all my driver's license pictures taken with glasses.
Yeah.
They were sort of thin-rimmed
glasses,
but I always wore them. If someone's trying to make if I'm trying to get into a bar or whatever, like I never get carded anymore, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Or if I'm writing a check, they want to see if I am, or a cop pulls me over, which would never happen.
Right.
Not in this city.
Hypothetically.
Hypothetically. They would hold it up and it would look like me because it has my glasses. But if I didn't have my glasses on, they...
Right.
So I put this online because other people started writing to me after this column saying, hey, wait a minute, they made me take my glasses off when I got my driver's license picture taken. So I went, I got in touch with the PR guy from the Secretary of State's office. So what's going on here?
Yeah.
And he said, if you read the language, it says that you may be allowed to wear them if you have glasses. And
whose discretion is it?
It's I guess
whatever
it's
mood they're
it's
in.
Up to the photographer, which is very strange, and it has to do with they just make a judgment call whether the glasses are going to ruin your facial recognition ability. Whether the image will distort your face so much that they can't use facial recognition technology on it. So like if Harry Carey, God rest his soul.
Yes.
If he were still alive, he would not be able to have wear those glasses.
Wow.
You wouldn't even know him without those glasses.
I know. Well, John Williams, who has Madden glasses.
Right.
And I bet he has to take them off, I'm sure, for
he
his
does.
Driver's
They're
license
very
picture.
Thick, yes.
But the point that I want to make with headwear is like, as long as there's not a shadow being cast over your face.
Yeah.
You should be able to wear whatever you want. You should be able to wear a tiara or you know.
I'm going
to
do that.
Yeah. You should be able to wear whatever you want because it doesn't impact the identifying quality of a driver's license photo any more than, say, facial hair or glasses.
That's the strangest one is a full beard and mustache. If you have it for the picture, you should probably have it when you get pulled over, right?
Yeah.
You shouldn't be allowed to alter
You shouldn't be allowed to shave, but that would be crazy.
Or the other way around.
You could grow a beard. You couldn't do it the instant you walked out of the office, but you could do it over time.
Over some time.
And so I just made the argument, like, let's just get rid of that thing because facial recognition depends depends on eyes, nose, yes. mouth. It doesn't depend on what's on top of your head.
Right.
Because you could shave your head after
Yeah.
You
yeah, that's thing, true.
So true. All right.
So anyway, that was the argument I made. So.
Hold that thought, Eric. No more thoughts for a minute or two. We'll come back more with Eric Zorn in just a second. It's Bill and 20 on WGN. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. Eric, we've talked about this before. The English language is constantly changing and evolving, and sometimes it's hard to find just the right word because of those changes.
Well, I was reading the 1619 package that the New York Times put out a few weeks ago about 1619 is basically they say that date is when slavery began mm-hmm. in America, and the writer Nicole Hannah Jones, as I'm reading along, I realized that about 16 paragraphs in, that she was not using the word slave. She was referring to them as enslaved people or enslaved workers over and over again, and really avoiding the word slave. And people who were slave, what we used to call slave owners, she was referring to them as enslavers. And it was distracting to me at first. And I was like, every time I'd read it, I would stumble over mm-hmm. it. Like there's something going on here, some of this terminology mm-hmm. that was bugging me. So I looked into it. I did some online research and found some scholarly papers and some popular essays about this, which is this is a transition that's been taking place largely in academia, because that's where they talk mostly about history of slavery. And they say that this is a term that really reflects the humanity of the people. It's part of this people first movement in language. Is the way you say some, like, is a person with diabetes rather than a diabetic
mm-hmm.
and
oh,
so
yeah.
on, and a person in a wheelchair or a person who uses a wheelchair rather than confined to a wheelchair, that sort of thing, where you're really stressing the humanity of the person. And so the argument being that this reflects the fact that you're not, this wasn't who you are for all time. This isn't your total identity. It is who you were then. You were an enslaved person, but it stresses your humanity. And it struck me that this is sort of part of a larger thing that we find in language, and that part of the point is that when you first hear it, it's jarring. And you're like, what? That's the term. And I'm thinking of one thing that made me think of was back in 1988 when Jesse Jackson held a news conference at the Hyatt Regency O'Hare, and he said, our people no longer want to be called black. We want to be called African American, because, and his what was his quote here? We were called colored. We're not that. We were called Negro. We're not that. To be called black is just as baseless. To be called African American has cultural integrity. It puts us in our proper historical context. I don't know if you guys remember 1988, but people were really indignant about that. They were like, mm-hmm. They're not all from Africa. They're not, mm-hmm. that doesn't, the many generations, they're Americans. Or
some black people were saying that,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. But it's one of those things that it made you think about that. And then that term just became commonplace. It just became something that people use and refer to, and no one thinks back to Jesse Jackson or at the same time that we would never use some of the old words for African Americans that used to be
sure.
used to be common, even accepted. So the language does change in that way. And I'm thinking also of things like, do you ever remember when they called flight attendants stewardesses?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And using the term flight attendants felt awkward at first, because it was like, flight attendant? Mm-hmm. Stewardesses. But there's a subtle message behind that, which is that this is not just a job for women.
Right.
I think it's important when you're talking about...
But Eric, the difference is, with all those examples you just gave, it became a new word or phrase. With slave and enslave, slave is the root word of enslave. So you're still using that word.
You're still using the word, yeah. But
slave is an ugly word, and enslave sounds
and,
better.
And there's they weren't staying away from like describing the institution as slavery.
Yeah,
I mean it's not like they're objecting to the root word. They're objecting to how,
just correcting people, the tense.
And you don't have to use it all the time. And I went through and I read and checked all the other articles in that package, and they, some of them alternated back and forth. And I think that seems right to me, that salting that usage in is a reminder.
But then when you have a novel and then later a movie like 10 Years a Slave, do you then try to change the title?
No, I don't think you do.
You don't, right?
I don't. And in fact, you know, one of the historians who objected to this, they interviewed, he said, hey, this was good enough for Frederick Douglass. It's good enough for me. You know, this is, this term has been used for a long time. And I think we all understand. I mean, no one thinks, oh, they volunteered to be slaves. No one thinks that. But it is a nice reminder, or a sobering reminder. Nice is the wrong word, probably. A sobering reminder of the humanity of these people and what this institution did. Just one other thing that I discovered in writing about this was that this people first thing, like you would say, someone who is visually impaired or hearing impaired,
yes,
that the deaf community and the blind community have rejected a lot of that people first stuff, that they take pride, deaf people take pride in being deaf. They say, look, this is being deaf is part of a culture, and we don't need to be fixed, and we don't you don't need to talk about us as though we're these sensitive, delicate people. You know, we're deaf, we're blind, and that's fine. And they even released statements, official formal statements, saying, you know, don't use these sensitive circumlocutions to refer to us.
Right.
We own these words.
That's interesting.
So it's a very interesting thing. And people will go like, oh, it's such a minefield, so politically, you know, everyone's so politically correct. And I don't feel like you should feel put upon by something like this. No one's going to like jump down your throat if you say visually impaired to someone who's blind. They might correct you because there's lots of, you know, I think people can tell your intentions. And if your intentions are good, you have a lot of slack, a lot of wiggle room to do that. But it's just interesting to think about the way we use these words. And there was one other thing real quickly, that there was a guy who said that calling someone a cyclist is a bad thing. They should be a person who cycles.
Oh,
because cyclist conjures.
I'll be more careful from now on.
So that's a little self-parody.
Thank you. That's Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. A person who writes. That's what he is. We'll turn things over to Steve in the Wintrust Business Lunch in a moment.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Jen DeSalvo, who's in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, right here, 720 WGN.